It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Since Capitol Hill, everybody has become pretty intimately familiar with how radical and violent the far right truly is.
Start making a list! Put all those names down! Yeah. And we start hunting them down one by one! Yeah.
Online, it exists in cesspools like the encrypted app Telegram, or Gab, a Twitter knockoff popular among extremists and MAGA types alike. And one thing many forms of far right have in common is their hatred for porn and the name brand of porn. Pornhub. Our motherboard reporter, Sam Cole, dug into the world of anti-porn Nazis, so you don't have to. And here she is to talk about it. I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. Okay, so Sam, your beat crossed into my beat, and you had a pretty amazing story. I mean, amazing in that it's very insightful and very terrifying for many people. But it's an important one. So how did you find out about an underbelly of neo-Nazis on Gab and Telegram and different kind of places such as this that I frequent in my own reporting on that beat on the far right? How did you find out there's at least a small subset that was very violently, not only anti-porn, but anti-Pornhub, and were making violent threats about it?
Yeah, so we first caught wind of this happening. A few sex workers on Twitter were tweeting about it. And then a source of mine, Mary Moody, who's a sex worker and activist, DM'd me these images and was like, you know, heads up, this is happening on these, you know, far right social media networks. But we kind of dug into it more and located the actual groups that they were coming from. And, you know, saw that these groups were, you know, like we say in the story, they were pretty small groups, but they were echoing a lot of the more mainstream rhetoric that these anti-trafficking organizations have been peddling in for a really long time. And also like on, you know, 4chan, 8chan, when that was a thing, and Telegram and all these other places, Parler was a big one for a while, where people are just like vehemently against porn and want pornographers to die, like to the point where they're posing with like, you know, guns and bats, baseball bats, and wearing like the skull masks and stuff like that. Just a lot of this very like neo-Nazi symbolism and saying, you know, a lot of just really racist, horrible shit. And it was all kind of from this place of like, porn is the reason that society is crumbling. That's their whole thing. So yeah, that's where I found it.
I mean, that's the thing, is you have this weird underbelly of far right that hates porn stars, pornographers. Sometimes, even if you look at something like the Proud Boys, they're often, yeah, you know, anti-masturbation. So are other groups. And this is the thing that it sort of, for me, it was interesting you picked up on it. It's a great story. It's one thing that is across almost every single spectrum of the far right is anti-porn. From the neo-Nazis, the what you call the skull masks that wear, the skull masks that are kind of their adherents of this thing called Siege, which is a, you know, very like deeply terroristic far-right neo-Nazi subset of the far right, to, you know, just your garden variety MAGA type. Mm-hmm. It seems like everybody is into it. But I thought what was interesting from the story that you did was that you found sort of this all women's group, mm-hmm, that were making these threats and were like brandishing weapons, which is, to be honest with you, I mean, you had some great comments in it from analysts that's pretty rare.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely something that stood out to us too, and stood out to, you know, the people that we showed it to who are researching these types of worlds, is that women were the ones posting these things a lot of the times, or at least they were posing in the pictures. So they were from like radical feminist groups, which that has a long history of like excluding sex workers from conversations about their own well-being. You know, radical feminists believe that all porn is exploitation, and is also like upholding the patriarchy and all this other stuff. So there's, you know, that side of things where they're saying that, you know, save your daughters from becoming this, but it's also like save the white race, save your children from this ideology of LGBT inclusion. You know, and it's all kind of wrapped up in this, like, bring pornographers to justice. And they believe that they're doing some kind of, like, moral societal good by, like, patrolling the streets and saying that they're going to, you know, bring them to justice on their own and take it into their own hands, which was really the scary part. And, you know, whether that's, you know, them just blowing hot air and being, you know, like, online terrorists, or if it's actually something that they want to act on, is the question. But either way, they're, you know, they're saying these things, and I think we should take them seriously just because of the track record of online extremists not being taken seriously. And then when they do go out into the world and kill people, you know, it's, no one should be surprised when that happens because they've been talking about these plans online. So yeah, that's, you're totally right that that was definitely a, that was a unique part of this, was that it was these rad femmes who are also, like, all about, like, Aryan unity and stuff like that. But
Christian identity as well.
Yeah, Christian identity, a lot of, like, religious speech, you know, the posting, like, wanted posters with, like, the face of who they thought was a Pornhub executive, but was some other guy. But, you know, they put it out as, like, a wanted poster against this one executive, posing outside of, like, the Pornhub offices with, it was photoshopped probably, but, like, posing with, like, a gun outside of the office type thing. It's pretty clear what they want to do and what they fantasize about. But yeah, that was what we saw on Gab in particular.
It's interesting that they really super dislike Pornhub too. Like, Pornhub specifically, which almost speaks to Pornhub's complete, you know, domination of brand identity when it comes to porn. And also the fact that, you know, you have this huge surge in far-right hatred for Pornhub and porn in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, we kind of connect the dots there with the stuff that they're saying about Pornhub and that they're targeting Pornhub specifically. But these mainstream anti-trafficking, anti-sex trafficking organizations are also targeting Pornhub aggressively and actually getting, like, Visa and MasterCard to drop Pornhub from their services. Like, the things that they're calling for, these anti-trafficking groups, are actually happening. They want Pornhub to stop existing. They want to shut it down as their thing. And they're saying things like, we're calling for Pornhub to be shut down and its executives to be held accountable for their crimes. That's what a mainstream organization is saying, which sounds a lot like the Gab posts that say all porn producers, people who watch porn, all porn stars must face justice for their crimes. It's almost the same exact language, but they're focusing on Pornhub because that's what is on the mainstream surface, and people are whipped up against Pornhub because of those organizations, basically.
I mean, that's an excellent point. And I think one thing to remember as well is it's sort of akin to, you know, say the mainstreaming of anti-immigrant sentiments within the GOP. Mm-hmm. And then you look within sort of the same political spectrum and you have far-right extremists saying very, very similar things. Like, we got to clean the streets up of immigrants. It's sort of this, like, this interplay between what some people think is just, like, an okay above board thing to say and how really when you break it down, it has a lot of sort of these hidden meanings that certainly are connected to white supremacy, to Christian identity, to, you know, anti-sex work sentiments that I think are really destructive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, like, the thing too to remember is that I think that people forget that, you know, especially I'm coming at this from reporting on the far right for so long. And when I see anti-porn conversations in the chat groups that I've seen before, you know, a lot of it, it's not like they have a Christian or a religious problem with, you know, exploitative sex work or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, they don't like it because it promotes interracial relationships. They think that it has something to do with, you know, this, you know, extremely anti-Semitic, you know, the Zionist conspiracy, how porn is controlled by Jewish investors trying to, you know, corrupt the Gentiles. It's just like, it's so wrapped up in this really obvious white nationalist conversation that when you look at a story like you just did, it's really tying all of it together and showing that it's kind of one and the same.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, a lot of the groups that we looked at, something that they repeated alongside of all of this a lot was a lot of really awful transphobia and a lot of slurs against trans people, and also just this really deep hatred for LGBTQ people. Like you said, like anyone who's not white, basically. And it is when they're talking about porn that you're totally right that it is, they're talking about being, you know, white women being corrupted in the porn industry and then white men, you know, watching porn and encouraging it or being like weak because they watch porn. That goes back into a whole other world, or, you know, it's a similar world of like anti-masturbation groups where they, you know, that's a Proud Boys thing where they say, you know, you can't masturbate more than once a month. You can't watch porn more than that often. So they believe that that is to kind of, you know, make yourself stronger, you know, work on your willpower, but it's also a control thing because they are controlling their members through this, you know, sexual control. And that binds them together because they're all in it together. So yeah, you're totally right. It's all so related. You know, it's these very like subtly different groups that are pushing different ideologies slightly, but it's all kind of tied together in this like white nationalism, like white supremacy world where they believe that these are the things that are eroding their hold on society and, you know, their place in society.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating as well that they're all finding a home in similar places, right? Like, you both have the hardcore neo-Nazi terrorist groups that are being cracked down on by the FBI and other, you know, intelligence agencies around the world. And then you also in the same breath have, you know, far right groups that are just, you know, MAGA adjacent that are all preaching the same thing. And they're all kind of, you know, whether they're on Gab, Telegram, Parler, these types of online forums and apps, they're all finding a place for it. And it's, you know, it says a lot about like where we're at in terms of the internet today. But, you know, I think what it also kind of reminds me of is sort of the early days of outrage culture around this, like going back to the 90s and like when you and I were growing up, when we were kids.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but I feel like right now this kind of reminds me of when, you know, you had that whole not only anti-porn, and anti, you know, I remember like when Madonna's sex book was just like, everybody was freaking out about it and losing their minds. And then all this, you know, around the same time, you also have this, you know, anti Marilyn Manson, he's corrupting kids into like Columbine massacres, into like watching pornography. And I feel like for one reason or another, like it almost seems like that era is kind of come back right now. At least for me, it seems like, what we're talking about, we're angry about Satanists again and porn? I thought we dealt with that in the 90s, but hey, I mean, you tell me. I'm just the journalist.
Yeah. It's all, I mean, none of it is particularly new. Like, this isn't coming out of nowhere. It's definitely like, it seems like a resurgence of that 90s kind of thinking. I think that also, I mean, a big part of that was, and you would know more about this than I do, but just the internet was very new then, and it was this panic about what porn would do to us, and like what being addicted to porn could do to a family, and like it would destroy lives. And even before that, in like the 80s, it was, you know, porn is contributing to violence against women, and that was a whole thing where a lot of these anti-trafficking groups that we talk about in this story, some of them were founded at that time when we were talking about like, is porn violent? Is violent porn bad for women? They started as these like feminist groups that, you know, believed that and lobbied against porn. But then it was like, it was about the violence part of it. And then, you know, in the 90s, it became like, what is it doing to you personally? And then also, you know, are porn performers like ruining your mind? and like, are they ruining our families and stuff like that? So,
which is just like,
it's all like,
yeah, which is so crazy because you're just like, I mean, look, I'm not a researcher, but I'm pretty confident that what, like 98% of people have looked at porn before and going back to what, the 60s and 70s, and like people still keep having families and still like people are getting socialized and seem okay. Like, I don't know. I feel like, it's probably not.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's the endless wars and the destruction of the financial system that's really really created the most the most issues, or if it's just like Pornhub and, you know, like
yeah, who could say? Yeah, I mean, it could be porn, you know, but it could it also be like the destruction.
Stormy
of, like,
Daniels. She did like, it. She destroyed everything. And then she even went so far as to embroil herself in her presidential.
Right.
How dare she?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's the way that they talk about porn is, I mean, it's just like, it's so crazy to me that they are attributing so much of society's ills to something that you could just, you know, you could take it or leave it. You don't have to watch it.
Yeah, and like everyone's not looking at it.
Right. Yeah, it's not even, it's not like you go outside and there's porn on the billboards, you know?
No, and like day in, day out, Pornhub is one of the most trafficked sites in the entire world. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, it's huge. I mean, isn't it like top 10, I think? And yeah, at least I'm sure its network is, which is crazy. That's, you know, the entire world. It's one of the most popular destination points. It's like, yeah. I think it's like that for a reason, everyone. Like, it's not going away.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's, and they now, I mean, they've made a bunch of changes to the site where they've changed their policies to make it even safer. So they don't have people uploading whatever they want, you know, without verification to Pornhub now, which was a huge problem before. And that's something that a lot of sex workers were like, please change this. Which I think we've talked about before, but they made those changes, and it's still not enough for these anti-trafficking organizations. They still want it gone.
Is that new policy working for Pornhub?
I mean, I don't know specifically, like, on their end, if they are seeing less, like, abuse of the platform. They still have it. Like, it's so you can't download videos. You can't upload things without being verified. The biggest effect that all that has had is that, you know, like I said before, the payment processors like Visa and MasterCard can't work with them. So these changes have actually hurt people who are using the platform for an income, which like increases exploitation and increases, you know, the potential and the risk for sex trafficking. But that's what these organizations are calling for, is, you know, for these payment processors to be cut off and then porn performers can't work and can't get paid. But that does the opposite of what they say they want, which is less sex trafficking. So it doesn't make any sense, but none of this does. So I don't know.
you have yourself a very, very interesting beat. And I think this is just another example. It's another example of how it intersects with all sorts of things in our lives. And yeah, it happened to intersect with what I think is probably one of the hottest stories in the world right now. No pun intended, by the way. The far right and how domestic terrorism is on the rise. And I think it's, you know, it's a pretty important one that you've shed some light on its connections to, you know, the anti-porn movement. So Sam, you will be on again soon, I'm sure. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, Mr. Lorenzo.
Hello, Ben. How are you doing?
It's you know, I'm getting there. It's nice to be vaccinated, fully vaxxed boy over here. I believe you're half done, correct?
Yeah, I'm almost there.
I got that weeks. Pfizer! Woo!
This podcast is not sponsored by Pfizer, by the way.
The only time you'll ever hear journalists like completely endorsing a drug company openly.
I mean, if they want to sponsor this podcast, I'm sure that we can make a deal, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so, I don't know. That's maybe a step too far, but I'm very happy to get this vaccine. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I bet.
It doesn't make me any more okay for the internet, though, because I'm still allergic to the internet and it's bullshit.
The internet's still on fire. We still don't have a vaccine.
Still on fire, yeah. We don't have a vaccine for that, unfortunately. I think that will take a few millennia. But let's get to this. Let's get to this. This first story. All right. So this one actually, this is kind of something you and I have been talking about for years. I mean, not this specific incident, but the fact that the same exact nuclear power plant that was hit by a very sophisticated cyber weapon called Stuxnet, and it sort of kicked off that whole cyber Pearl Harbor thing. But basically, the American and Israeli intelligence services were able to get through an air gap, which is systems that aren't connected to the internet at all. They were able to use USB sticks, or so we think, to take out a nuclear power plant using code in Iran when Iran was at the height of its sort of ambitions to create nuclear weapons. This is back in 2009. It's like a huge, this is like basically, I don't know how many cyber war and cyber thing trailers have been cut to this, to the Stuxnet, but I like, it's not just us, it's everybody. Everybody in InfoSec.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say that this is the most famous cyber attack in the world. Ever.
Probably the most famous cyber attack, period. And then anyway, so then this poor little power plant, nuclear power plant, it gets hit again over the weekend. There was some explosion, some mysterious explosion, and Iran blames Israeli intelligence again. And of course, this is coming right as the American and Iranian officials are negotiating sort of return to the Iran nuclear deal that President Trump had pulled out the United States from. And it was signed in 2015. It was sort of Obama's, one of his top, you know, diplomatic achievements. But the thing was, today you and I were like, you were like, well, they said it was a bomb. And then I countered, well, the last time people thought it was a bomb too, and it ended up being computer code. So we don't really know what happened here, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to unpack here. So let's start with what we know, I guess, at this point. So we know that, as you said, the Natanz, the nuclear power plant in Iran, had a huge problem yesterday. There was a blackout. Then Iranian government sources publicly said that there were some explosions. They blamed this on Israeli sabotage. I think that's the word that they used. They also used some, you know, something like, this is terrorism, which, you know, that's the usual.
Nuclear terrorism,
I guess is the usual Iranian-Israeli hyperbole. At the same time, there was a Haaretz article that sort of speculated that this could have been a cyber attack. And I really want to stress,
we don't know. Yeah, it's speculated.
Like the line on the article is literally, on the basis of past media reports, one can infer that this was caused by an Israeli cyber attack.
Yeah, which could mean, because Haaretz is obviously has lots of sources in the Israeli government, so this could be just a plant.
Yeah.
Or at least a leaked story, but not to say that Haaretz isn't a good news outfit, but you know, they've got a lot of government sources.
Yeah, it's a great newspaper, but you know, this article is very careful not to say out loud. And the way they say it, it's, in my opinion, it's a little bit wishy-washy. You know, they're saying, well, you know, in the past, we did hack, you know, Israel did hack.
Yeah.
Iran, so maybe it happened.
And, you know, and the last time it was, there was an air gap and there was, they were able to get through it without actually hacking into it from outside the system itself. But I think the things we do know for sure, which makes this significant vis-a-vis Stuxnet and that hack, is it's the exact same place that was hit by Stuxnet. For right around the exact same sort of reasons to continue to mess with Iran's ability to enrich uranium, which allows them to create nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was also at the height of some of these diplomatic tensions. So it is. And you know what? The other thing too, we should remember, at first Iran didn't know what happened. Nobody knew what happened when Stuxnet occurred. Mm-hmm. But then soon after, when it was confirmed that it did end up being, you know, a code-based attack. Mm-hmm. Iran did call it sabotage.
Yeah. I think what's interesting here is definitely the timing. You know, one, as you said, the talks were literally supposed to resume today.
Yep.
So I don't think that's a coincidence. Also, Netanyahu came out yesterday. He did like a little ceremony for Independence Day or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, he put out a statement on Twitter saying, you know, it's important to keep fighting Iran. You know, they're a threat, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from the government, like, it doesn't seem, you know, the government of Israel has not come out publicly saying they did this, but they are very close, you know?
It's kind of like, it's very similar to the way the Israelis have always been like, we don't have nuclear weapons. Wink, wink.
Exactly.
Nudge.
And that's nudge. And as you were saying, that this is interesting because in 2009 it took years for this to come out at all. Yeah, like the attack, I think the actual attack, I think, was maybe in 2007 or 8. Anyway, like it took a few years to even for this to even come out. And, you know, if our listeners have read the excellent book from Kim Zetter on Stuxnet, it took a lot of people you know, putting puzzle pieces together. So it's interesting that Israel is signaling that, yeah, they did this. But yeah, in terms of the cyber angle,
We don't know yet. We have no idea.
And you know, it's important to remember that the Mossad is pretty good at their job. You know, they have sent people Iran's downtown. They killed scientists in Tehran's downtown.
Yeah, like literally like over the summer. There was one that happened, I think, in the fall. There was wasn't it that weird like drone attack? It was like a drone pistol, literally, or something insane.
There were rumors of that too. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember what the details were.
Whatever it is, the Israelis know how to. They seemingly know how to like do things inside of Iran.
Yeah. The Mossad is pretty deep into Iran, so yeah. I guess time will tell. It's very early. You know, it literally happened over the weekend. This stuff usually takes a little bit of time to trick out, you know, the leaks will happen. There was a New York Times article this morning that, you know, talked about that it was the fact that it was sabotage, there were explosions.
Yeah. Everybody wait for those WAPO New York Times leaks and we'll know more about this maybe in 2 weeks, maybe tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm sure that the national security reporters at the Times and the Post are working very hard right now.
Yeah. All right, now on to another story with a Washington angle, but it's a lot cheaper and gets a bad look. This is Matt Gaetz I'm referring to. To be fair, the Daily Beast did a fantastic story looking at his Venmo transactions and linking his Venmo transactions to someone allegedly who's involved with paying an underage woman on his behalf, or at least that's the insinuation from the story. But you did a thing of, well, you know, you can keep your Venmo transactions private.
Yeah, shout outs to the Daily Beast. That was a great scoop. Mm-hmm. They went through Matt Gaetz's Venmo payments, which were public because
he set them as public.
In the story. Yeah, well, he probably didn't in a way set them as public. Like when you sign up for Venmo, Venmo makes them public by default. So if you don't actively go into your settings and turn them private, they're all public. And you know, Matt Gaetz, as you know, a lot of other people didn't do it. But, you know, I guess if you're trying to get your friends to pay for sex workers and some of them may be underage, perhaps you don't want to do that.
I just think what do you say, bro? Like, what did you label it as?
The Daily Beast reported that the label was hit up name of the person.
What?
They didn't publish the name, which I think was the right thing to do. I mean, the story is basically that, Gaetz sent a $900 payment on Venmo to a friend who is an accused sex trafficker. And the message said, hit up name of the woman. And then the next day, Gaetz's friend sent three payments of $300 to the three women, including this woman who at the time it appears was underage.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is an awful story.
Really, you know? It truly is an awful story. Wow. Yeah. It just gets worse, too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and we still don't know a lot of details, right? Like, this is just what's transpired so far. I'm pretty sure it's going to get worse. But we just thought that this was a good excuse to remind people that Venmo has still is this weird social media aspect to it. I don't really understand that.
I don't really understand why that has to be, why people do that,
I don't get why they are still pushing for this social media aspect. You know, they want to be some sort of a payments Twitter. I don't know. I don't care if what my friends pay for, you know,
or no, I don't
who
either.
They pay. So, I don't know. In my opinion, it would just be more sensible to just set it up as private and not because, you know, I want politicians to hide their crimes. You know, this is a good story in a sense, right?
That's a great story.
We were able to find out.
Yeah, but I think the bigger question is do you really need to see everyone's transactions just from a privacy point of view, period?
Yeah, and as we reported on Motherboard many times, a lot of our colleagues have over the years, researchers have showed that, you know, it's relatively easy to find, you know, whether your friends have paid for weed or drugs, mm-hmm. you know, like there's like emojis that people tend to use for that kind of thing.
Yep.
And it's like, just set it private, you know, just set it private. It's going to be better for everyone.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, in case of crimes, the feds can still get the details because they're going to subpoena Venmo. So, you know, we're not, obviously we're not trying to protect criminals here. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, let's get to this final one, which is, not the best, actually, for a lot of people who are very upset to see this. But Amazon successfully busted the union that was being tried down in Alabama. And Lauren was there for it.
Yeah, this is kind of bad news if you're, you know, into labor rights. Amazon won, essentially Amazon won the election, which means that enough Amazon workers at the warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, voted against the union. So yeah, effectively the union push in Bessemer is right now dead. There is still some, the retail, wholesale and department store union has already said that they're going to challenge. There are some ballots that need to be challenged or that the union is going to challenge, but those will not be enough even if they get overturned. But what the union is saying is that Amazon used essentially illegal tactics to convince workers to vote against the union, you know, and Lauren has done a great job over the last few months reporting all the details of this anti-union campaign. You know, it includes social media surveillance, pamphlets sent to the workers, even trainings that Amazon forced them to watch that were essentially, you know, propaganda, anti-union propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a labor lawyer. I don't know if this is going to stand, but it's definitely not good
luck. They're challenging it. Yeah. They're challenging it. I have seen some stuff already saying that there's some other places in the U.S. that people may try to unionize Amazon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think one thing is that I keep forgetting whenever I hear about this story, and I think that's important for other people to remember, is that, you know, Amazon has been unionized in Europe many times. Like, it's not, this isn't new for the company. It would be new for the US.
And this is not going to be the end of the company.
No. And I keep forgetting that. I'm like, wow. So there's Amazon unions around the world, just not in the US.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of this is a really bad look for Amazon. You know, despite the victory, mm-hmm. this is a bad look because I think it was just a week or two ago that we were talking about the pee bottle scandal, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
When Amazon's main PR account on Twitter was going around just randomly replying to randoms, essentially saying, oh, you don't believe the reports that our drivers pee in bottles. And then the next day, Lauren literally published pictures of the pee bottles, which was amazing scoop. And also, like, I don't know, really bad look for Amazon. Come on. Great dunk.
Yeah, it was
great dunk, though.
It was a pretty great story. But yeah, I mean, I just remember when the Amazon, I think it was like the comms account, the mm-hmm. Twitter account was wiling out.
Yeah. I mean, again, like
it was also getting like Twitter ratioed by people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just don't say that, you know, like, what are you gaining
it's like somebody's not sleeping enough or something like that.
Yeah, propaganda gone wild, you know, like I understand need to counter the union points and arguments, but that's just like, you're really shooting yourself in the foot with that.
Yeah. But I guess in the end they did win.
Yeah, but as you said, this is just like one of potentially many other votes. You know, there's more warehouses that are organizing, so we'll see.
I mean, it definitely makes you wonder if it's more when it will happen, not if it'll happen.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if like we're gonna look back at this in a year and say, well, this was, you know, a setback, but some other warehouse in New York, California, who knows where, did it. And, you know, I guess maybe just one doing it will open the floodgates, I guess. We'll see.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, I guess, Lorenzo, that was a spicy cipher. It's a lot in there. A lot of discussion.
Yeah, crazy week.
Well, I'll catch you next week.
Yeah, talk to you later, Ben.
Thank you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.